Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Have a case of cold pills soaking in a milk jug. Hydrochloric acid, iodine, and phosphorus. Careful not to get any on you when you shake it up. That's the way we
do it. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The last time Steve Earle joined us on Soundcheck, it was to talk about his Hank Williams-inspired debut novel called I'll Never Get Out of This World Alive, and to play us a couple of songs from his album of the same name. Well, as it turns out, Steve Earle's writing career was just getting started. 3 years later, the singer-songwriter has also released a book of short stories, he's working on a second novel and a memoir. We'll talk with him about all those projects in a moment, but first, here he is to play us a song, Steve's Hammer, for Pete. It's Steve Earle, live on Soundcheck.
One of these days I'm gonna lay this hammer down. Leave my burden resting on the ground. When ain't no hunger and ain't no pain, I won't have to swing and sing. One of these days I'm gonna lay this hammer down. One of these nights I'm gonna sing a different tune. All night long beneath the silvery moon. When the war's over and the Union's strong, won't sing no more angry songs. One of these nights I'm gonna sing a different tune. Someday when my struggle's through, I won't have to strive. All I can do is let this hammer fly. One of these nights I'm gonna play this hammer down. Leave my burden resting on the ground. When all up sail and the ocean's clean, kids don't die for gasoline. One of these days I'm gonna lay this hammer down. John Henry was a mighty man. He worked his whole life long.
That is Steve Earle, live on Soundcheck, and the song Steve's Hammer for Pete. The subtitle, Steve, referring to the late, great Pete Seeger.
Yeah, and I wrote it, you know, so that was on Washington Square Serenade, which was, I guess...
6 years ago, 7 years ago?
It's been more like eight. So the year I moved to New York, you know, so I guess it came out in 05, 06. But it's... definitely wrote it in 05. Yeah, it was tough. I played the first show that I've done since Pete passed away Saturday night up in Port Chester, and there's like you know, I opened with Where Have All the Flowers Gone. It's a big deal. He's 90, you know, he was going to be 95 in May. Mm-hmm. You know, he was closer to 95 than 94. So That's a good run for anybody, but also on the other side of it, we had Pete a long time, and he was. I hope that I'm doing what I'm doing as high a percentage of my life as Pete was. He was working pretty much to the end.
Yeah. And are you doing what you're doing, sort of under the inspiration of people like Pete and Woody Guthrie? You know, people from
music.
Yeah, sure.
I'm a folkie. I don't. You know, I got.
He wasn't just a folky. You know, for him, folk music meant something. It meant.
Well, it did, but I mean, I think it means something to everybody. I think you can be. I'm probably not as political as Pete. I played the Clearwater Festival several years ago and had to do my whole set with Pete and Toshi sitting on the side of the stage. And I probably did the most political set I've ever done because I didn't want to get in trouble. But because he's Pete Seeger, you know. So. I don't see myself as a political writer. I see myself as a writer that's a political person, you know. And I think Pete, that's probably true of Pete too. Pete's idea was that folk music was art that could be consumed by and also made by almost anybody. And that was the whole idea of folk music. And it's sort of the original, you know, DIY thing. You know, it's that was the attraction. I think that, you know, college kids latched onto it when they did because it made them look as cool as listening to jazz, and they had no hope of being able to play jazz. So it was one of those things. And I think it's underestimated how much that had to do with rock and roll becoming an art form. I think folk music in Greenwich Village in the 1950s and 1960s, and Bob Dylan wanting to be John Lennon and John Lennon wanting to be Bob Dylan, I think that's what elevates rock and roll to art once and for all. Otherwise, it's just, you know, a lot of loud songs about girls and cars.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it was also music that was accessible to people of modest musical skills.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. You could learn to play guitar some, and you could learn to play banjo some. And and Pete believed in that, and he believed because of that that you could reach working people, that it was a tool for raising working people up, as Woody Guthrie did before him.
Steve Earle with us on Soundcheck, remembering the late, great Pete Seeger. You put your finger on one of the main things about Pete Seeger, which was, you know, this sort of sense of everybody can make this music. And, you know, by the 80s, he really wasn't able to sing very well anymore.
But he was a genius of it. I saw, when I saw those Pete gigs beginning in the 80s and the 90s, I started seeing my future. I started figuring out that when my voice becomes a little weaker, I can get the audience to
sing
the show for me. And it was pretty amazing.
And I was just thinking, as you sat there playing Steve's Hammer, I'm thinking...
I do a sing-along on that one. I play it live always. It'll probably happen on every gig I do this month. So,
Steve Earle is playing a series of all-request shows at City Winery right across the street from our New York studio every Wednesday night this month. What are the perils, the pitfalls, and the rewards of doing an all-request show?
I have no idea. I've never done one before. The first one will be tonight. You know, it's one of those things. I think there's a tendency to hate requests because there's that person that comes and yells for the one song that they know you for.
Right.
I actually I have two or three of them. And you know, there's people that think that Copperhead Road was my first record, and it's not, you know. And there's people that request songs off Guitar Town. In Ireland, I'll be remembered for the Galway Girl. There's not any doubt about that, you know. So... it's not, you know, but I don't know. The older I get, I've asked for requests several times. I started on solo shows last year. With the band, I don't do it very much.
Right.
But on solo shows, I started taking requests. It's chaos, though. People start yelling out, start trying to out.
So how do you do it?
There'll be a card for every single person that's in the City Winery. I think the cap's 300, you know, it's a I think so. It'll be 300 people exactly in there. There will be 300 cards on the distributed around the table, so everybody gets a whack at the pinata.
Okay,
and you get to write down your request, and it's going to go into a hat, and I'm going to draw the set as I go along and play it. If I run into two or three dirges in a row, and I have written some, then I may push the card back and play it after I come up with a couple of up tempo things to sort of keep the set going.
And
but I will play everything I draw.
Are there Steve Earle songs that you don't remember how to play?
I had a book made for this occasion with all of the lyrics. I have virtually everything I've ever written in one book now, and it's going to sit there in case I get stumped.
And when some Weisenheimer requests Freebird, what do you do?
They get a free bird. But we can't really go into that on the radio. So. I don't like Lynyrd Skynyrd. I kind of never did. So it's one of those things. It's not a song that I would take kindly to having requested at one of my shows anyway.
Right. But it is one of those, that and Whipping Post, you know.
I love Whipping Post, but, you know, that's the Allman Brothers. That's a whole other level of art.
Right.
But that's just one of those deals.
Can't do that solo.
No.
Got an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, I get requests for, obviously, Copperhead Road and Guitar Town. I get requests for, but there's other songs. You know, I'm lucky that I have, people, and guys and girls request totally different things. It's going to be interesting to see what turns up.
Okay. All right. Well, that's an interesting observation that maybe the genders go for different types of songs.
Oh, they totally
songs.
Do. No, I write chick songs on purpose, and I don't, you know, it's one of those deals.
You write chick songs, you write guy
prevents
songs.
Prevents my audience from becoming exponentially hairier and uglier as time goes on. And it's like...
You just don't want to see that face in the mirror out there 100 times in the audience.
Yeah, that's it. That's the deal.
In addition to the songs, you've been writing novels and short stories. What about this memoir? What's the status of that right now?
The memoir is what I'm working on at present. It's, you know, it's hard because there's actually a lot of research involved because it's not an autobiography. It's a literary memoir that's largely about recovery. It's about mentors, and it's three acts, basically. The first part's about Towns Van Zandt and Guy Clark and, you know, mainly Towns, but, you know, people that...
That meant something to
that
you.
That meant something to in what I do in my day job. And the second part is largely about two men who were first cousins and were both drug dealers and sort of protected me, not because they loved me, but because I was a commodity during the lowest period of my life and right before I went to jail and after I was in jail. And then the third part is about my grandfather, who started nearly every 12-step meeting in Northeast Texas. He's actually my mother's stepfather. And he got sober here in New York City right after World War II. So that means that he knew Bill W. and he knew Dr. Bob. And so I've gone into – I grew up with the Serenity Prayer and the steps on the wall. So I had that resource to draw on. He was long gone. He died in 1966. But I suddenly realized who those guys that were sleeping on this couch were. And that's it gave me an immediate connection to what has saved my life and what still saves my life on a day-in, day-out basis, which is I still go to meetings and call my sponsor. That's what I do. That's the center of my life.
Yeah. We were speaking recently with Jason Isbell, the singer-songwriter. He used to be with Drive-By Truckers, et cetera.
Yeah, I've known him since he was about 9, so. Yeah.
Figures.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's an exaggeration, but I've known him a while.
But, you know, his recovery, you know, and how that sort of has affected his writing, his songwriting, which is pretty direct. As it happens, but it seems to be different for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's what you have to be careful about talking about this stuff because there are traditions and they're important. And you know, I can't name the name of a particular 12-step program. I'm comfortable with saying 12-step program. There are people that will argue with me about that, you know. But that's that's like a. I'm put a lot of thought in talk to my sponsor and talk to other people that have way more time than I've got, and I've arrived at what I'll talk about and what I won't, and I never deviate from it, and it hasn't changed much over the years.
So the memoir, how far along are you?
Well, it's like I'm haven't finished the first part yet. I'm maybe halfway through the first part of it, and I backtracked to write like a prologue that's about my father, a short piece that's about my father, because my father isn't one of these mentors, and there's a reason for it, and I just felt like that was worth touching on, so I backtracked to that, and I'm working on that right now, but you know, I should publish it, early next year, hopefully.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Steve Earle with us on Soundcheck today. Many, many projects being juggled at the moment. The Low Highway was the last record. You want to play something from that for us?
Yeah, let's listen. It's like traveling around, you know, I just kind of figured out that I had the best band I'd ever had, and we're out playing shows, and decided I wanted to make a record with that band, and you got to write songs about something. And I just realized that what I was seeing out the window of the bus was something a lot closer to what Woody Guthrie saw than songwriters of my generation have seen before. We all emulated that, and there's even a whole fashion, you know, trend among singer-songwriters that has to do with the Depression, but nobody that's doing this had actually experienced what Woody did, and now we kind of are. It's tough out there, so... Traveling on a low highway, 3,000 miles to the Frisco Bay, across the rivers wild and a lonesome plains, up a coast and down and back again. I saw empty houses on dead end streets, people lining up for something to eat. The coast of America watching me through the broken windows in the factories. Naked bones of a better day as I rode down the low highway. Traveling on a low highway by the yellow moon and a light day, snow white crown on a mountain top, valley down where the shadows fall. Met a man with a rifle in his hand. Been away to battle in a distant land. Taught him to hate and taught him to kill. Now he's out on the road with a hope to build. Nobody knows the price he paid. So he's taking his toll on the low highway. Crumble in the white dove flies. call for justice and a cry for peace. The voice of reason and a roar of a beast. Every mile was a prayer I prayed as I rode down the low highway.
Steve Earle live on Soundcheck, and the title track from his latest album, The Low Highway, which came out last year. Steve is playing a series of all-request shows at City Winery here in New York every Wednesday night in the month of February. So, can I make a request?
Sure.
All right, well, Valentine's Day is coming up.
It is, absolutely, and I'll that'll probably come up in one of the, I predict that's one song that will get requested. I'll get a lot of Copperhead Road, and
but it's such a sweet song, you know. I don't have a card to sign. Roses have been hard
it was
to find.
Desperation.
I hope you'll be mine on Valentine's Day.
Well, it was desperation. It was like I literally had just gotten out of jail, just gotten clean, and I couldn't get any kind of license, and I could not drive, and I did not push my luck and drive. I had a driver eventually, but I didn't even have the driver yet at this point because I got out of jail, and you know, it's like this is in December, and it's like this is February 14th of 1995, and I realized late in the day on February 13th that I wasn't going to be able to get anywhere and do anything about Valentine's Day. So it was... come to you with empty hands, guess I just forgot again. Only got my love to send for Valentine's Day. I ain't got a card to send. Roses have been hard to find. Only hope that you be mine for Valentine's Day. I know that I swore that I wouldn't forget. I wrote it all down. I lost it, I guess. There's so much I want to see, and all the words just slip away. The way you love me every day is Valentine's Day. If I could, you know I would deliver to you diamonds and gold. It's the least I can do. So if you take my hope, where I'll make it up to you. Then I hope my heart'll do for Valentine's Day. For Valentine's Day.
Steve Earle with the song Valentine's Day, live on Soundcheck. And Steve, you know, one of the great things about art of any kind, but songs like that in particular, is you don't have to be just out of jail and just into recovery. I could have been that. I have been that guy.
Oh, yeah, no. That's what the job is. The job is, I wrote Johnny Cash's favorite song of mine was Little Rock and Roller. And we talked about it. He came all the way across the stage, and you know, to tell me that he liked that song, at a benefit we did together. And it was just, and it was the first time I realized that what that I was starting to get kind of good at my job was because he said, you know, that he said, it doesn't matter, you could be a truck driver. And I found out to be true. It wasn't just a song about doing what I do for a living. Anybody that's away from their kids can relate to this.
Right,
song.
Right.
It's the job. It is empathy to a certain point.
And anybody who has realized on the night before Valentine's Day or their significant other's birthday or anniversary, whatever it is,
right,
that they've forgotten again, can sympathize with the narrator in that song. So Valentine's Day is coming up, and all next week we're going to be asking our Soundcheck listeners for what they think is the most romantic song of all time.
Wow. There's probably a lot of songs I could come up with if I really thought about what pops into my head, just because it has to do with when I started playing and what I took to be romantic and employed that way is probably Sunlight by the Youngbloods. You know, Jesse Colin Young song.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the way she feels about you. It was guaranteed, you know, girls would pay it. It was two songs you had to know playing the places I was playing in Texas. You had to learn, Help Me Make It to the Night. There were a lot of cowboy hats, and you had to know Sunlight. There was a lot of, you know, bell bottoms and crop tops.
Although, Help Me Make It Through the Night
worked fine, too.
Also, yeah.
It's a pretty romantic song.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's I'm sticking to it. I think maybe Sunlight by the Youngbloods.
All right. Before I let you go, Steve, 50 years of the Beatles here in the U.S.
Yeah, big deal for all of us. You know, I don't think, everybody...
Did you watch them?
Oh, absolutely. I remember it really well because my uncle was 5 years older than me, and I'd already heard the records and listened for them on the radio. I had transistor radio, and I listened at night. And that's, my uncle being 5 years older than I was, he was in high school, and I was eight, and I watched that show. I watched the following week and the week after that, which I didn't know was being replayed. It was taped and being replayed from rehearsal, but I thought the Beatles were there for 3 weeks. And it changed my life. It changed everybody that I know's life. It was a really, really big deal. Ed Sullivan knew it was a big deal. That's why he put him on. I heard somebody say the other day, said, well, everybody you talk to says that they saw this. And I said, dude, everybody saw the Ed Sullivan show. Nobody missed Ed Sullivan and nobody missed Bonanza.
Right.
Trust me.
Even if the Beatles hadn't been on, there was nothing else to do.
They would have seen it. And it's one of those things. More kids watched Ed Sullivan because they heard about the Beatles. But it's not far-fetched at all to think that everybody that was old enough saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan show, because they did.
So it's like that famous Sex Pistols concert in England where only like 20 people showed up, but all 20 went out and formed a band.
Right.
Like 100 million people showed up.
I'm not sure. Out in the United States, I don't think more than 20 people ever saw the Sex Pistols. Maybe San Francisco. I was at the show in San Antonio, the Randy's Rodeo show. I was living
of the Sex Pistols.
Yes, at Randy's Rodeo, which happened to be a block from where I grew up. And I was in Austin. I was living in San Miguel Allende in Mexico. And these friends of mine were saying, well, the Sex Pistols are playing. And, you know, I'd barely heard them, you know, because by 1977, I just heard the first Elvis Costello record and was starting to get interested in having an electric guitar and rock and roll. But from the time I was 72 or so, I was listening to Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark. So I was listening to a particular kind of singer-songwriter music. But these guys wanted to go see the Sex Pistols, and I'd heard of them, but I didn't know what it was all about. But they said these plans to play in San Antonio called Randy's Rodeo. I know where that is. It's about a block from where I grew up. And so I led the expedition in, and that it was the show where a long neck beer bottle came whistling up at the stage, three songs in, hit Sid right in the forehead, and he just sort of staggered around and bled, and there was no bass for the rest of the show.
How was the show?
Sucked.
Yeah.
They were really bad. I love that record, but that show was really bad.
All right. Well, the Beatles put on a good show, three of them, 50 years ago.
It was pretty amazing. Brian Epstein, there's a lot of things he didn't get right as a manager because he was kind of an amateur. He sold their merchandising for a tiny amount of money and a lot of other things. But that was pretty – he put them on Ed Sullivan for less money than they could have gotten for one appearance to make sure that they were on 3 weeks in a row, and it turned – and it worked. Because they had been trying. You know, the Beatles had been releasing records in the States for a year with absolutely no success until they were on the Ed Sullivan show.
Well, Steve Earle taking a page out of Brian Epstein's book by doing a series, a weekly series of shows. It's not Ed Sullivan, City Winery, here in New York, every Wednesday night, all requests.
That I get to walk to work.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Steve, always great to have you with us here on Soundcheck. Thanks very much.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Bars out on the corner, the way they were before. For me, I don't go down there with my money anymore. Yeah, I can still remember when it used to kill the pain. But I woke up every morning with a pocket full of rain. It's me easy. I've been up and down, and lately I can't seem to keep my chin up off the ground. But I'd rather eat a pound of dirt and taste that taste again. And the world of hurt is better than a pocket full of rain. Like a pocket full of rain.